The FCC ruling on VHF ELTs has been in the works for years. Sundance Resources' downed plane has been found. And a California court has convicted pilot David Riggs. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, June 24th, 2010. Aviation alphabet groups have jumped to respond to the threat of the Federal Communications Commission's proposed ban on the certification, manufacture, importation, sale, or continued use of 121.5 MHz emergency locator transmitters. It's being portrayed as a sudden, unexpected ruling, but not really. Like the California flight instructor regulatory mess of 2 weeks ago, the FCC's ELT ruling shows, if anything, the extent to which the alphabet groups are focused on Washington in general and the FAA in particular, and don't have the mechanisms in place to monitor lawmaking at the state level or rulemaking in other federal bureaus. In the California case, Assembly Bill 48, which industry groups warn will subject even individual independent Part 61 flight instructors to crushing fees and regulation, was passed way back last year and signed by Governor Schwarzenegger on October 11, 2009. Apparently because it wasn't an aviation bill and removed exemptions for flight instruction as part of a routine reauthorization of post-secondary education regulation, nobody in Frederick or Oshkosh picked up on it. In the case of the FCC's ban on legacy ELTs, the June 1st ruling appears at first glance to have gone unnoticed within the aviation industry for about 2 weeks, but it actually stems from a notice of proposed rulemaking dating all the way back to 2006. Rick Perry, VP for Industry and Regulatory Affairs for the Aircraft Electronics Association, said in the June 23rd Aero News special feature that the FCC has been inundated with comments on the action and has said it will not take any action which forces pilots to choose between contradictory federal rules from the FCC and the FAA. He adds that in response to the heads-up from AEA, AOPA, and other groups, the final rule has not been submitted to the Federal Register for publication. Therefore, the 60-day clock for implementation of the rule has not begun. Unlike the California state legislature, the FCC at least seems to admit it had inadequate background on the feasibility or impact of its ruling, which Perry estimates would have forced 200,000 aircraft through 800 repair stations in a 60-day window, impossible even if an adequate supply of newer ELTs had been available. AEA adds that the FCC has clarified its intent to outlaw only those older ELTs which have only 121.5 capability, not the newer 406 MHz ELTs which also transmit on 121.5. Perry says details in this story are developing rapidly. In the meantime, there appears to be a lesson for all of us. If you see something happening in your state capital and it looks like it might impact aviation, call your alphabet group. As huge as the web of government has grown at all levels, it's not reasonable anymore to assume our industry advocacy groups will see everything without our help. The wreckage of a plane carrying Australian mining executives, including Sundance Resources founder Ken Talbot, has been found in the Republic of Congo. Officials say there are no signs of any survivors. The CASA C-212 twin turboprop was reportedly carrying 6 Australian, 2 British, 1 American, and 2 French citizens when it went down. It was being operated as a charter flight by Aero Service. Bloomberg cites info on the European Commission website in reporting the company is banned from operating in the EU. The Aviation Safety Network notes that Aero Service has a record of 3 crashes in the past 5 years. The wreckage was discovered by a search and rescue helicopter crew. The Republic of Congo has formed a commission to investigate. The flight data recorder has not yet been recovered. Australian Foreign Minister Stephen Smith said in an interview with the Australian Broadcasting Service that coordinating the investigation between 2 different governments will have its own difficulties. A pilot charged with endangering lives and property of others with 250-knot low passes over the Santa Monica Pier in an L-39 back in 2008 has been sentenced by a California Superior Court to 60 days in jail, a $900 fine, and 36 months probation. David Riggs has already had his pilot certificate reinstated by the FAA after a 210-day suspension. The buzzing was part of a promotional effort for a movie titled Kerosene Cowboys, which IMDb lists as being scheduled for release this November. Riggs reportedly shares credit for adapting the story used in the screenplay, and the hot passes over the pier were reportedly accompanied by another plane towing a banner promoting the movie. A second L-39, piloted by Skip Holm, was reported in formation with Riggs. The two make an odd couple. The LA Times reports that Holm is a Vietnam vet who retired from the U.S. Air Force as a lieutenant colonel in 1992, with 350 combat missions and 3 distinguished flying crosses, while Riggs has multiple convictions for wire fraud, bank fraud, and passport fraud. The Times also reports Riggs defended his actions on the premise that the L-39 was well-maintained and flown by an expert pilot, so there was no danger to the public. In contrast, 2 FAA inspectors had earlier charged that the plane was in disrepair and being used illegally as a camera platform for movie work. In emails forwarded to ANN, Riggs tries to blame external issues for his consequences, including calling himself a fall guy in the ongoing friction between Santa Monica and the FAA. Pilots who operate out of Santa Monica Airport have expressed concern that a successful conviction in a state court on aviation-related offenses may set a precedent which could be used against them by NIMBYs. And, as ANN reported last November 9th, the Riggs incident has become a black eye for all jet warbirds carrying experimental airworthiness certificates. Up next on ANN, airline passenger revenue is making a strong comeback. ALPA prepares for a strike against Air Transat in Canada, and another attempt to return to the airport after a loss of power has failed. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 24th. I'm Paul Plack. ATA, the Air Transport Association of America, said Tuesday that passenger revenue, based on a sample group of carriers, rose 21% in May compared to the same month in 2009, marking the 5th consecutive month of revenue growth. Only about 2% more passengers traveled on U.S. airlines in May, but the average price per mile rose 17%. International passenger revenue rose 36%, led by a 51% gain in trans-Pacific markets. ATA President James May noted, quote, "These results reflect encouraging signs of the nation's economic recovery from the very deep hole of a year ago," unquote. U.S. cargo traffic, as measured in revenue ton miles, rose 17% year-over-year in April. May's cargo numbers aren't yet available. The Airline Pilots Association International says efforts to negotiate a collective agreement with Air Transat, a division of the parent company Transat AT, have stalled. The union announced plans Monday to file for conciliation with Canada's Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. Captain Sylvain Aubin, chairman of the Air Transat unit of ALPA, commented, quote, "We are disappointed with the company's proposals and the absence of commitment to job security. After months at the bargaining table, negotiations have stalled," unquote. The appointment of a conciliator by the Minister of Labor sets in motion a series of deadlines for negotiators on both sides. The process ends with a 21-day cooling-off period, which could be followed by a strike by ALPA or a lockout by Transat. ALPA's major contingency fund has pledged $1 million to support strikers if it comes to that. NTSB is investigating the crash of a Cessna 210 chartered by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The plane went down Monday near William T. Piper Memorial Airport in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. 3 were on board, none survived. The Williamsport Sun-Gazette reports witnesses said the 210 appeared to be having engine problems over the city. The pilot turned toward the airport at a low altitude, but was unable to make the runway. Airport authorities say the pilot had radioed to ask about landing and fuel, but did not mention any problem with the aircraft. FAA spokesman Jim Peters says the plane was on final when it went down short of the runway, hit a utility pole, the porch of a house, and three vehicles before exploding. No one on the ground was injured. Still ahead, the Commercial Spaceflight Federation is suddenly more hip. The U.S. Air Force tries robotics camps to boost interest in STEM. And here's your ticket to go behind the scenes at Oshkosh. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, June 24th. I'm Paul Platt. With the conspicuous success of the SpaceX Falcon 9 on June 4th, the Commercial Spaceflight Federation is suddenly a very hip room, a sort of chamber of commerce for the commercial space industry. Last week, the Federation welcomed new executive member Bigelow Aerospace, which is developing a commercial space station. Monday, the group welcomed ULA, the United Launch Alliance, which operates the Atlas V, Delta II, and Delta IV launch vehicles. Both companies have come on board as executive members. ULA CEO Michael Gass commented, quote, United Launch Alliance has close business relationships with many members of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, including Bigelow Aerospace, Sierra Nevada Corporation, Space Florida, and X-Corps Aerospace. Additionally, ULA is a funded participant in NASA's Commercial Crew Development Program, so joining the Commercial Spaceflight Federation is a natural fit for us, and we are proud to do so, unquote. Federation President Breton Alexander noted, quote, with the addition of both United Launch Alliance and Bigelow Aerospace this month, the Federation is even more strongly dedicated to our shared goal of a robust space economy, creating jobs here on Earth and new opportunities in space, unquote. The U.S. Air Force has signed a contract with private education provider PCS Edventures, that's Ed Venture with an ED, as in education, to develop and facilitate youth robotics camps at 7 air bases in the Pacific region this year. The company says it utilizes hands-on manipulatives, computer technology, and robotics that focus on science, technology, engineering, and math. The contract calls for week-long spring break, summer, and winter break camps that focus on developing youth skills in the STEM disciplines through experiences with building and robotics. The program is designed for youth 6 to 18 years old, and the camps will be held between now and December 31st for students at Eielson and Elmendorf Air Force Bases in Alaska, Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii, Kadena, Misawa, and Yokota Air Bases in Japan, and Osan Air Base in Korea. Bill Albert, VP of After School and Summer Programs for PCS, commented, quote, PCS has consistently provided excellent service to a number of youth services programs affiliated with our military. We look forward to a further enhancement of our reputation for performance and excellence with the Air Force and other branches of the U.S. Armed Forces, unquote. And finally today, it's that time of year again. ANN is looking for stringers to help us bring the stories of EAA AirVenture Oshkosh to our readers, listeners, and viewers. We're looking for a few great writers, photographers, and videographers who will get the opportunity to experience the event in a way no ordinary attendee does. Working news media have access to people, places, and aircraft that nobody else gets. Also among the skill sets on our wish list this year is someone to back me up doing audio. And we also need a high-energy gopher who can keep all the behind-the-scenes stuff running in a fast-paced operation. If you'd like to be considered, send us samples of your writing, audio, or video work, appropriate to what you'd like to do. Be sure to tell us about any areas of particular interest or experience within aviation, and any relevant software proficiencies as well. Email, if interested, publisher@aero-news.net. Be sure to mention stringers in the subject line. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell talks about the future of the Eclipse 500 with Mason Holland, Chairman and CEO of Eclipse Aerospace. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.